WRLR 98.3 FM.
All right, we are back to Reality Radio. I'm your host, David Rich, and on the line we have from Little City Foster Care, Emily and Mariah. Ladies, how are you?
Doing great.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Thank you so much for coming on the show. This is important stuff that we need to talk about, and it's not something that I think should be ignored, because I think that there's a lack of a sufficient conversation going on in this country concerning foster care. And I think it needs to happen, and people need to get involved in at least the dialogue so they understand what's happening and how they can, if they can, help. So why don't you just start off with a history of Little City, the organization, and then each of your respective, how you got involved in this. Whoever wants to start, Emily or Mariah, it's up to you. You choose.
Great. Well, this is Emily, and I would be happy to start. And firstly, just want to thank you for giving us this platform to really be able to share and discuss this really important issue of what's happening in foster care, especially amidst the pandemic. There's been a lot happening in the last year. So let me tell you a little bit about Little City. We have been around for more than 60 years.
50-5-0?
Innovative.
Do you say 50-5-0 or 15-1-5?
Neither. 60.
Oh, 60. 6-0. Okay. All right. Good. I'm glad I clarified.
Yes. Yes. So very long-standing pillars in our community of providing, you know, innovative and client and family-focused services to individuals, both youth and adults who have intellectual and developmental disabilities, including autism. Our foster care program specifically have been around for close to 30 years. And we've been primarily providing services to date within the Cook and DuPage County regions, but we've started our expansion within Lake County.
Oh, great.
And, yeah, and I currently serve as Little City's Deputy Program Officer of In-Home and Family Services. So what all of that means is I have oversight for our DCFS Foster Care and Adoption Program, our DHS Home-Based Services and Respite Program, and our Community-Based Clinical Services, all of which serve Lake, Cook, DuPage, McHenry, and some rural counties. And I've been with Little City for going on 12 years and continue to remain committed and passionate about their mission. So, again, glad to have this platform to talk with you and your listeners further about it today.
Absolutely. Thank you. Okay, Mariah?
Yes, so I am Mariah Brandon. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
I'm the intake and recruitment coordinator for Little City. I started with Little City back in 2014 as a specialized child welfare specialist, or as many know, as just the caseworker, or what you would identify as the social worker that comes out to do the visits for the youth in the home and in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And now in my role is to cultivate and actively seek loving and open homes for youth, our youth in care, and essentially manage the intake that DCFS provides to us, and then try to match with prospective foster parents.
Well, great. That's very cool. Sounds like a very important position. So, Mariah, why don't you, would you elaborate on that whole process of, like, how do you, like, vet a family to make sure that they're a proper family, providing a proper home for a foster child? Because there are definitely, you hear things in the news on occasion that, you know, foster parents did not treat their foster children very well and that kind of thing, that some people do it just for the money and that kind of thing. So could you kind of expand on that whole process and expel some of those negative rumors that are going on?
Absolutely. The start of our process for how to become a foster parent is first, answering our call to action. Like now, we're saying, hey, we're actively seeking foster parents, you know, please check us out on Facebook or check us out, you know, call us. And that's kind of that first initial contact. When a prospective foster parent reaches out to Little City, we provide them with some of our FAQs, you know, the truths, the myths about foster care, and then give them some literature on Little City and what it takes to be a foster parent. Our quick, easy steps to qualifying to be a foster parent is that you have to be 21 years of age. You need to have the space to have a youth in your home. And what that means, just to clarify, is that you don't have to necessarily own your own home or, you know, your own place where you live. You can also rent, and that youth just needs their own space. So that does not necessarily, if you have another youth in your home, they can share a room as long as those room is big enough to accommodate two youth. And we require them to, you know, be you know, with a certain age. They can't be over the age of 18 if they have to share a room. And then you have to be able to complete your application and then pass the standard background check.
Oh, okay. So is there any sort of history of, do you have to be a heterosexual couple? Can you be a part of the LGBTQ? I know there were some issues about that before.
Yeah, absolutely not. Little City actively welcomes and actively recruit. You know, looks for the recruitment opportunity of all walks of life, all genders. You know, and we even have our own. We were one of the first foster care agencies to be recognized by the HRC, and we received that seal quite a couple years ago. So that's very exciting for us as well. And like I said, we, even with our mission statement, we actively seek and encourage and welcome everyone, no matter of where they are with their income, their educational status, their where they are with their job, as well as their sexual and or gender expression or orientation.
Well, that's great. That's really encouraging to hear. I love that. Emily, why don't you talk more about your specific position in the organization and what you do and the effects of it and that sort of thing?
Sure. So I was just kind of reflecting a little bit before this call, because we did a call to action within our foster care program last time in 2014. And at that point in time, our campaign was called 15,000 reasons that we need a parent, or there's 15,000 reasons that you should foster, because in 2014, at that time, there was around 15,000 youth in the foster care system within the state of Illinois alone. But we've had to, sadly, update our campaign to the call to action now being there's 21,000 reasons that we need a parent and to foster, and that really is this desperate call to action, because in that, over that last about 7-year time frame, you know, the number has continued to increase. So now, throughout the state of Illinois, there's nearly 21,000 children who are in foster care, with close to 600 just in Lake County, who are in need of loving homes. And that's really kind of our call to action. What we've seen since the pandemic has been an increase in the need for services, for foster parents, as stated, you know, things like that. But there's been a decrease in the availability or interest of families looking to become foster parents or offer support in other kinds of ways to youth who are in care. And so that's really why we're here, is to try to build a stronger foundation of support for these vulnerable families and the kids that they're serving, so that we can proactively provide services, stable living environments, and again, that care and support network that these families need and these youth need to have better outcomes. So that's really a big part of what I'm doing in all of those realms related to working within that foster care space and providing community-based services for families. Mm-hmm. Under that clinical umbrella and CHS as well.
So let's talk about some of the the tougher stuff in this. Well, this whole issue is pretty tough, especially when you're dealing with children. But how does a child become a foster child? I mean, what happens with the parents, the family structure, whatever, that causes somebody to want to give up their child to the foster system?
I can answer that question. So I would say to a quick point of clarification, I don't think that a parent would ever willingly, it's rare that they are giving up their child
to the foster care system.
Oftentimes you become known to the Department of Children and Family Services following a call of abuse or neglect having occurred in the home by their primary caregiver being, their birth parent, most oftentimes. There are other circumstances where youth may become known to the foster care system under what we call dependency cases. So that might be circumstances where the birth parents and birth family don't have an adequate care plan. And so if they were incarcerated, for example, the youth would be left not with someone to care for them long term, and they end their foster care through that way. And sometimes dependency can mean youth might have increasing or challenging behaviors that might require a higher level of care, such as being placed in a residential setting, for example. Those are, again, are more rare than the typical reason would be a reported allegation of abuse or neglect occurring to that youth that is then investigated by the Department of Children and Family Services, or DCFS. And if there's substantial evidence of abuse or neglect having had occurred that is then verified by the court, that is when a youth may become a youth in care at that point in time and be placed into substitute care, foster care. And Mariah can for sure chime in, because being on that intake side, we're reading through different profiles of youth in need of loving homes, every day. But I think a lot of the reasons that we're seeing for, why youth are coming into care, it does go back to lack of community resources and support. And oftentimes our families, they might be struggling with substance abuse, domestic violence. There can be mental illness. Sometimes there's some multi-generational factors of, previous abuse and neglect in the family.
Sure.
Or combination of any of those things.
Right, sure.
So it's pretty complex.
Okay, yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's not easy at all. So in between the point of a court order, say, to remove the child from their home for whatever one or more of the reasons you just stated, to the point of being taken into a foster home, foster family's home, where do the children stay?
So usually when the allegations of abuse or neglect are founded, mm-hmm. That is when DCFS and we all get involved and try to have children placed that night. That's always our goal.
Okay.
And that's usually when DCFS, they're the kind of the front hand of like DCP, they go out. That's kind of like those front runners. And with Little City being a specialized agency, they are then referred to us if they meet our agency's criteria. We are primarily a specialized foster care agency. However, we do have, so that means, our kids, most of our children have some type of emotional, behavioral, and or cognitive disability. For our children who are considered traditional, to say that they don't have those, does not have a labeled disability at the time of them being referred to us, and them being traditional, they're oftentimes referred to us if we already are servicing their sibling.
Now, is there, when somebody applies to become a foster parent, do they get to, I hate to say it this way, but I don't know how else to say it, but do they get to kind of like pick and choose what kind of child they want? Like when you go to adopt a child, like, like it's like they're going shopping or they're ordering at a restaurant, which is a very odd thing to do. You know what I'm saying? It's very strange because you're dealing with people. But I mean, I don't know how else you would do it. But is that a thing for in foster care as well?
To a certain extent. So a part of me being kind of the first person that our prospective foster parent would talk to, when a part of one of the requirements for prospective foster parents is to attend an orientation for us, because we really want you to understand, you know, what foster care is. And because you said, you know, we don't want this to seem like, oh, let me go pick this out, or I'll take that one.
I'll take a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, you know.
Right. Now, we always tell people it makes sense for you to like what you like, or to think you like what you like, right? Or,
sure.
Because, you know, so we say, so as an idea, what do you think, you know, would work for your home? Because to me, I had to be, that's a part of my title, is matching coordinator. So
right.
It's a match. There's no unwanted children. There is simply a home that is not found at the time, you
gotcha.
Know? So,
sure, sure.
The way that usually works is that during orientations, we do have what we call awaiting youth, youth who are either in need of a home, that eventually goes to permanency, meaning that they are become adopted or the guardianship from a foster parent, or, we have children who need temporary, you know, care while we work on them returning home. Because in foster care is always a temporary placement. It's never intended to be a long-term placement, and you're supposed to work the goal. So if the goal is for that child to go home, which is always the first goal, we work that goal. For our youth who need to become be adopted and or have guardianship, we work on that. So during that time of orientation, and then later on during the licensing process, we really start having those real hard conversations, and we have what we call a home study, and we really get to know you, you know, as a person, and, you know, as a soon-to-be parent, and really kind of talk about what makes sense, right? So we have some foster parents that say, oh, I want a baby. I want it because everyone wants a baby, right? But
yeah,
then they're like,
super cute.
Oh, well, I want a little baby, but I worked all this time and I need this kid to be independent. Well, then we're looking at a school age kid then, you know, so sometimes simply really working with our licensing representative and myself and Emily, you really get to have those conversations about what makes sense for your home and what, like, you know, because you need to be able to serve, you know, this child as much as that child needs to be able to, you know, be a great fit for your home as well. So it's more so in that way. I will say during orientation, for our kiddos who are awaiting a home, we will sometimes, if they are legally free and we have our consent, we will show, you know, we'll give descriptions of the kiddos. So we can say, oh, Timmy is 15 and he's this and he's that, you know, and this kid loves basketball and he loves, you know, swimming and you have a swimming pool, you know, just kind of like
we're able
to kind of give that story and give them more of their background. And once foster parents are further in their process, we try to actively match while they're currently getting licensed. That way it kind of like it closes that gap of being licensed and having to wait so long, you know, to receive a youth. When we're licensing you, we're already thinking, okay, so this foster parent, you know, talks about wanting a, you know, a girl, they would be open to a boy, but, you know, the home, you know, is more so they think it's best for a female in their home.
Right.
You know, any ages between, you know, 10 to 14. And then, you know, we start thinking about the youth that we are currently have and who needs a placement. And then we will say, you know, if you say, oh, well, I really want a youth no older than 14. Okay, but if I have a youth that's 15, or let's say that you said no younger than 11, but I have a 9-year-old, I'm still going to present, you know,
sure.
Because it's a conversation. Hey, yeah. I know you want this age, but this kid is, you know, independent, or this kid, you know, does need more support than, you know, so because we have youth from one spectrum to the end. We have kids who are off to college this coming August, and then we have youth who, you know, stay with Little City until they receive DHS services.
Okay. Interesting. Is there, you mentioned that the numbers of foster children are going up and the number of families willing to foster children is going down. And you said that happened definitely there was a spike in both directions during the pandemic. Is it because it's just the fear that they're going to foster a child that's sick? Or is it a fear that they're going to get the child sick? I mean, could you explain that, what their mindset is concerning that?
I think there's a lot of contributing factors. I think one just being the unknown. Right. I mean, this being in a pandemic for many of us, probably most of us, this is our first time.
Yeah.
So we're all trying to navigate through one day at a time of like, what does this mean?
So they just want, they don't want to include another variable in this. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's just, so I think the immediate thing was just, you know, everyone kind of looked at their own immediate family and what impact does this pandemic have on their children, their jobs, their ability to run their households. So that was definitely a factor. But then I think you're right, just adding in a different variable of, okay, should I open my home to a prospective youth who's currently in foster care? And by doing so, that brings, you know, that our youth have to be monitored. So there's caseworkers that are required to visit your home. There might be other, you know, service providers such as a clinician coming to the home, our licensing representatives, and other people like that. So during a time when you're nervous about contact with lots of different people, intrinsically in foster care, there has to be some level of contact and monitoring. So there, that increases somewhat of your risk of exposure at that point. But I think one of the biggest things that we saw, and it keeps going back to services, but I think because it's just so true, is, you know, during the pandemic, there was just an overnight shift to e-learning, and now parents have already taken on but now they're a teacher.
Sure.
And so to add a youth, another youth, or a youth period to that type of situation is a huge undertaking, because you've got to not only potentially do your job from home, but now teach a youth or additional youth throughout the day. And that was just stressful for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, again, just in that added variable of a lot of people, and rightfully so, did their own self-assessment and just said, despite my desire, now is just not the time. And I, again, completely respect and understand that, because it's been quite the year plus that we've all, you know, are starting to come out of. But I would say on the hopeful end of things, one thing that, despite all the challenges and difficulty getting services like daycare and kids going to school and summer camps and any of that stuff that we usually use to help support our families, you know, most of our kids that we've been serving in our foster care program maintained, they were stable in their homes.
Mm-hmm.
They were still able to stay there. We were able to find homes for these kids, even bring in new kids and support them. And as things are loosening up and people are starting to feel safer, you know, I'm starting to see a slight uptick in the number of people who are expressing some interest or at least wanting some more information about being foster parent. And so I think that that's really encouraging. And of course, we want to continue to see that keep happening.
Okay, interesting. Is there any sort of push or attempt to have a foster child placed with family or family friends first before, say, a stranger? Or is it, you just go down the list of applicants?
Mariah. That is a great question. And
thank you.
I think throughout the field, most of the work has definitely shifted. And it's always first and foremost with family.
Okay.
Or someone we would consider a fictive kin.
Right.
Luckily, legislatively and through our policies, there's an expanded definition of family, which includes fictive kin.
Oh, really?
Which essentially just means somebody who has a close emotional tie to a youth. So that could be a mentor, a formal foster parent, a neighbor, a teacher, a radio DJ.
Hey, there you go.
a coach, you know, a pastor,
anything like that.
I think it's that fictive kin area that has really allowed providers like Little City, and like Mariah and I as those foster parent recruiters, that flexibility that we've really needed to engage our community members and those people that, especially for our older youth, they'll tell us, I want to go live with so-and-so, or can you see if I could stay with, you know, my pastor, my neighbor, my old babysitter, you know, whomever. And then it's on us to really engage with those people and make sure it's an appropriate and safe place for our kids to stay. Most oftentimes it is. And that's where they go. And that really helps our kids stay in their communities of origin, connected with safe, you know, maybe family, people with family ties and things like that too. So definitely have seen a big shift in the practice because of that law related to fictive kin, but just really, again, that emphasis on trying to keep kids connected with their immediate and extended family.
Yeah, and I think I'm not a psychologist, and so this is just a completely naive statement, but it seems to me that a child would probably feel better with somebody that they're familiar with. You know, it feels, you know, they, you know, you throw them into a completely foreign situation, and it's just a little bit more stress than it would be if, you know, you send them to an aunt or uncle. But again, I don't know. Real quick, it's the top of the hour, everybody. It's you're listening to WRLR 98.3 FM, the voice of Lake County. This is Reality Radio. We are at Around Lake Beach, Illinois. This is Reality Radio. I'm your host, David Rich, having a lovely conversation with Emily and Mariah from Little City Foster Care, and learning a lot about the foster child crisis, the process, the legalities of it. Do I have you both for a little bit longer?
Sure.
Okay, great. Because I have a lot more questions. Let's talk about the actual legality of it. So here, I'm going to start with my own personal experience. Not personal experience, but what I witnessed. But I lived in Portland, Oregon for a while, and I remember knowing two people who were a couple. I'll just say Jack and Diane to keep it simple. And they were just boyfriend, girlfriend. Jack had two children that lived with him. He was divorced. Diane would spend time at the house, of course, as boyfriends and girlfriends do. She saw Jack do some things with his children that she did not find appropriate. It turned out to be something as innocent as, you know, like they would, like, you know, fall asleep in the same bed or on the couch together or something like that. And, you know, I mean, I slept with my parents in their bed, and it's not a big deal. She thought it was inappropriate. So she called DCFS on him, and they yanked his children away for probably 3 or 4 weeks until they could figure out that everything was fine, and then they gave him his children back. He was pissed because it was a mere accusation based on no evidence whatsoever, and they took my children from me over one person's comment. So, like, could you go into that a bit? Because I was like, yeah, dude, that does not sound okay to me. you know what I'm saying? I mean, a lack of justice, I guess you could say, in the process of going through this, that kind of thing. Is that something that you guys encounter a lot or at all?
So I would say, as a system, you know, Mariah spoke to a little bit earlier that DCFS is solely responsible statewide for doing child protective investigations. So when there is a call around potential allegations of abuse or neglect, it's child protective services who's making that assessment of immediate risk of harm for safety or risk concerns. Little City, our role as a private agency provider in the foster care space would be not on the front end like that. It'd be something like if a youth was already in with a home with a relative or an unrelated provider, and then a hotline call was made on them,
sure,
or something like that. That's when we do. We either have to, in conjunction with Child Protective Services, make safety plans, that risk assessment and planning. Potentially, it may involve moving youth for sure, and things like that. So, I mean, based on that, you know, vignette shared, that seems somewhat exceptional, but again, I think we work in the space of gray, and that's what makes our job so challenging is, you know, not only do we work with people, we work with lots of different kinds of people in really challenging circumstances, mm-hmm. and we're constantly having to assess, you know, any types of risk of safety. And so I would have to assume whatever they, whomever was responding, based on the information they got and whether through their own assessment and interviews and things like that, they thought it rose enough to a level to at least maybe move the kids temporarily as an ultimate, just out of an abundance of caution, you know, until they could get more information that they maybe needed to determine that, in fact, this maybe was a bogus allegation and they were safe to go back home.
Right, right, right. No, and I get that. I there's no system, no human-made system that's perfect. And I get that. I mean, obviously, you know, over the last year or so, we've been dealing a lot with, policing in America and a lot of the problems with that and, you know, cops shooting people when they shouldn't have, you know, that kind of thing. And I don't know if any of those cops, maybe Derek Chauvin, but besides that, I don't know if many of those cops, you know, like, you know, were just, you know, cold-blooded killers. They just, you know, they made a decision and it turned out to be the wrong one. Mistakes are made. And it's unfortunate because mistakes are made in ways that are just absolutely tragic. And like I said, like, you know, a police killing of somebody who didn't deserve to die. And like with my friend, you know, like his children were taken away, even though it was temporarily. I just remember he was just horrified. He's like, I can't even believe this is happening to me. So, but yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, you strive to make the system better, tighter, more ethical, you know, that kind of thing. So it's a work in progress for sure. What's the distribution of foster families as far as, like, you know, Mariah, you said earlier that, you know, you really tried to be super open to the diversity of communities and types of people, including income. I believe you said income too, which I thought was interesting. So there's no standard of, like, income for, like, you can actually be below the poverty line and foster a child?
So the way that we, with ICES and how we assess your appropriateness to foster a youth is that you have to be able to take care of yourself. You need to be able to continue to provide a roof over your head and for you to be able to take care of all of your needs.
Okay.
The state on our end provides you with a stipend to care for the youth that we are placing in your home. It's not income. It's a stipend to actually provide food, shelter, and basic needs for that youth. And any other services, for instance, a specialized youth, we make sure that we provide stipends for transportation, so things like that. But you have to be able to care for yourself. We provide for the child. You need to be care for yourself. And a part of the licensure process is that they go over different budgets and understanding different things within the home to make sure that the home is safe and appropriate as well. So that's definitely a part of that process too.
Gotcha. Okay. And that's an interesting point that you brought up. Like, so the stipend that's given, the money that's given to provide for the child. What about, like, health care? Are all foster children immediately automatically covered by the state when it comes to health care and that kind of thing? Does the foster family get a automatic health care coverage, or how does that extend out? And as far as, like, and talk about schooling, too. Like, okay, you're probably going to have this child for a couple months here, so we may need to make sure that, you know, they're in third grade, that they get to the right school and that kind of thing. Like, how is that all provided for the family?
Yeah, so for all youth who are identify as youth in care, the state is is your guardian, and health care is provided to you through the state.
Mm-hmm.
So you receive that in the medical card throughout your entire...
The family too, or just the child?
Just to the child.
Okay, gotcha.
The actual youth in care. Once a child is either adopted or that family provides that certain amount of permanency, so that's either being legally adopted or getting legal guardianship of that youth,
mm-hmm.
that family has the option to put that youth on their health care.
Oh, okay. So is the family having a health care plan an essential part of the requirements?
No, absolutely not, because
really?
A youth in care... up until that child continues to have that medical card throughout.
Interesting.
Even once the adoption is closed. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what's the actual age limit? Is it different state to state as far as, like, what counts as a child and what counts as an adult? I know that in Illinois, I think 17 is actually, like, let's say, the age of consent. I think. Maybe it's 18. Everybody thinks that it's 18 across the nation. It's not. So what? How does that work? The actual age of, like, you're an adult or you're a child?
So for a little city, we have youth from 0 to 21.
21?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. Can I ask why? Why above 18?
Yeah, so the way that it looks, I think this is probably one of the best decisions that was made from the state. I can just speak for myself. I'm not a youth in care, and I went away to school, and I definitely don't identify myself as someone that was ready to take on the world at 18, you know? Especially for your, what they call your wardship, or you extend it until 21 for different circumstances. And for most of our youth, circumstances is due to them being specialized. And what that looks like is some of our kiddos, they need extra services, right? That's where we come in and why they have been deemed as a specialized youth in care. So we're able to provide them with additional services up until their 21st birthday. And Emily, am I wrong? Did that age get increased again?
Emily?
Well, not to my knowledge. I think just statewide foster care, because of, you know, the policies in place and adopted in Illinois, it's up until the age of 21. You're right. Because of the pandemic, there is an ability as an exceptional response because of the pandemic that some youth in care stay may extend, actually, past their 21st birthday. yeah, you're correct.
So you can go out to the bars as a foster child? I'm being silly, but I mean, you know, you go to the bars, you're like, hey, what do you do? I'm a foster child. Wait, what?
Well, we do have, there are other services put in place, like youth in college. So, yeah, I mean, and those, they have different, we just took a training on that earlier today. They have different requirements that youth must meet in order to continue to be under the care of the state, and it's different services that you qualify for and different resources that you qualify for, you know, for you to go away to school and get your college education. So that can be extended. And then a pretty common example are some of our youth who have cognitive disabilities. We have a youth who just turned 21 and she has the, I believe she had cerebral palsy, and she had additional services that she needed. Her worship was extended to 21, and then we make sure all of her adult services, because she is going to need services, you know, probably throughout her life. So we set her up to make sure she has an adult guardian, or if she goes to an adult assisted living program, some different different transitional centers and things of that nature. So a lot of our youth need to stay past that 18-year-old mark for sure.
Gotcha. Are there any sort of standards or regulations on the child themselves concerning, I mean, obviously nobody's allowed to break the law, but I mean, like, just behavior, you know, their dynamic or attitude towards their parents, is that measured? Is it, you know, followed up, tracked, if you will? And like behavior, like, let's say you are 18 years old, are they not allowed to smoke cigarettes, you know, that kind of thing? I guess if you're over 21, can they drink alcohol? And nowadays in Illinois, can they smoke pot? I mean, that kind of thing. Is there any restrictions on that?
So one of the great things about Little City, I can just speak to from working here and just seeing, you know, different policies that we've kind of put into place to mediate or kind of minimize any behaviors as possible, because you have to think about it, right? In general, youth can have behaviors no matter if they're at home with their biological parents or if they're home with, in this case, being a youth in care. But when we talk about adverse childhood experiences and trauma, that we just couple with that. So one thing that we work with all of our youth that are old enough to really comprehend and understand what we're doing is that we have what we call a foster parent and child youth foster care agreement. And it's kind of cool. I mean, it's a simple form that a staff member has created, and it literally lists things that, you know, you have a household agreement of what's appropriate and what's not. You know, are cell phones appropriate? Are they expected? Do I have a curfew or right. do I have to just ask for it to go outside? To your point, oddly enough, the question of, like, smoking cigarettes, like, drinking hasn't been a big topic for okay. many of our youth, but I can only assume that that is something that, as our youth get older, that's something to talk about, you know, sure. is that now that you're of age, are we going to celebrate, you know, with a glass of, you know, an alcoholic beverage? I don't know. But that's kind of things that we kind of look at in that way, but there's not something that's like per policy we can tell a kid that what they can or can't do.
Sure.
We obviously have to just follow the law, but when it comes right. to those are household decisions that as a team, we try to make the best decisions for our youth, you know,
sure.
Especially with some of our youth being taking psychotropic medications and, you know,
oh, yeah.
you know, really talking that through even from, you know, bringing in their clinicians or, you know, a team meeting that's like, hey, this probably isn't the best idea because of, you know, medically, not saying we're party poopers, you know, so that's probably our biggest thing, I would say.
Yeah, okay, now that's interesting for sure. Yeah, I was just wondering, like, you know, and like, I guess I should have added dating to that list of, you know, things like, you know, if a 16-year-old becomes a foster child with a family, like, you know, I guess, is it probably, I'm guessing it's up to the foster parents if they're allowed to, the child to date or not, or that kind of thing. What about religion? Let's say you place a child in a family, let's say the family's super whatever, whatever religion you want to pick. Let's say a Christian religion, so we can use church as an example. And they go to church every Sunday. And say the kid's 16, 17 years old, they've, you know, that's old enough. They've made up their mind about what they believe religiously, and they're like, no, I'm not going to church. Has that ever been an issue at all? Like, you know, that kind of thing?
Not with any of my cases, and Emily, you can jump in on this one as well. But that is one that is in policy of that we cannot force religion on any of our youth.
Well,
you know,
good.
I have not, since I've been, when I was a case manager as well as in my intake, usually, I've never had kids say, oh, I'm not going, or, you know, or they want me to practice this religion, but I'm that religion. Almost usually we have more kids choose to go to church on their own,
oh,
and
sure.
they kind of get into their own, religion. And we have some foster parents who are pastors, and they take all of their kids, and that's fine. But we cannot force our youth to practice any set religion.
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah, probably in those sort of circumstances, you know, I could see a child looking for a positive community to belong to, you know, getting some sort of ideas of hope, you know, and healing and that kind of thing, you know. So, okay, that's very interesting. Where do you see the foster issue going? You think after the pandemic's over, you think the numbers are going to go down as far as number of foster children and foster families applicants go up? Do you suspect that?
I believe so. I can only speak to just what me and Emily kind of just have to sit down and talk weekly, if not more. And we just go over during our supervision on ways to, you know, continue to get our name out there and to educate, you know, to different communities on foster care, you know, but also who we are, you know, like, you know, some people who know foster care, they only know DCFS, right? And so it's really important for us to spread that knowledge about the different type of services that we provide, as well as, you know, who we are and that call to action of what we need. And I can only speak to from this time last year till today, at one point it was just radio silence. Like, a part of my job is to reach out to foster parents who are looking to be, you know, to looking into Little City, or even just saying, hey, can you send me some information? At one point during the pandemic, I didn't get not one inquiry, you know, and I can just speak to today. Our orientation is coming up this on the 20th. So that's this Thursday at 6:00. And we do that virtually, and I do have participants. So, I mean, even something as small as that, I can see that rising. And I've also started to just see more agencies talk about that need for foster parents, and it seems like just across the state there's a deficit and there's a need. So I'm hoping that we are definitely, you know, getting through to you know, people who have just thought about being foster parents, dispelling the myths, and, you know, really more so giving them that assurance of, like, this is a team effort. Like, we're not dropping children off and saying, oh, figure it out. Like, even small things like you said about, oh, what about religion? Well, if that ever got brought up, that is a team meeting that we have to call, you know.
Sure.
By, you know, per policy, we have to do quarterly child and family team meetings. So that's something when the entire team, you know, all that are applicable, get together and really talk about what is needed, you know, what services are still needed, how this child doing, what needs to be changed. So I'm really hoping that, you know, we do get, especially with us trying to expand into the Lake County area, just to kind of, you know, let them know I'm so happy that things are opening, but then also giving them that assurance and that courage to say, you know, it's been heavy on your heart. You've been thinking about fostering, you know, even just talking about how we foster from 0 to 21, you know? Right. So it's always encouraged. So I'm really hopeful that 2021, 2022, that 21,000, you know, goes down, you know.
Right. Yeah, I'm just, I mean.
I think the number, sorry, just to say really quick, I do think that number of 21,000 youth in care will go down, because also there's not going to be such a gap as far as, I think a lot during the pandemic, different communities saw the need for services and to invest in their services. So I know, you know, a lot of, you know, including Little City, like we're investing more of our resources in developing our community-based clinical services. So we've got mental health and behavioral services we offer more now than ever before. And I know other organizations have done something similar in order to offer that proactive community-based support. So with the intention that hopefully you then don't even come to the attention of the department, you know. So that's my hope, that will help contribute to decreasing the number of youth in care as well.
Yeah, let's hope so, because, I mean, it's so important for anybody at any age, but I think probably especially children up until, well, any age really, but especially children, to know that they're wanted, to know that they can fit in somewhere. You know, I mean, the high school dilemma of, like, you know, all the cliques and everything else, and it's a very true thing, and it's those divisions, those social divisions can cause a lot of harm and damage on people's psyches, and just, you know, a child being, you know, whatever their parents, you know, again, like, got arrested, just had problems with drugs and alcohol, all of a sudden, you know, they don't have an option out there. They feel not wanted. That would just be an awful, awful feeling. So let's hope that gets remedied. Is there any sort of governmental issues with the foster care industry, if you will? Like, for example, like, you know, is, you know, everything in this country gets politicized. You know, if you're a Democrat, you believe all this. If you're a Republican, you believe the opposite, blah, 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 blah. You know, and nobody seems to check for facts. They just, you know, believe in political agenda. You know, is there any sort of, like, you know, if you have a Republican administration, they want to cut the funding because they think that, you know, once you're out of the womb, you should get your own job or something weird like that. Or, you know, if a Democratic administration is in, you know, they want to increase the funding to foster care. Does that have any bearing on it at all? Anyway.
That's also a good question. I mean, I think the short answer maybe of that would be there's always different policies being enacted that impact how we do what we do. I think under our current administration, I've seen nothing but support for proactive community-based and foster care services. You know, there's been some times years past when that did seem to be threatened, for sure, and threats to social services in general. But we've been very fortunate, you know, for the last few years at least, to have, I think, the support that we need to try to address really the critical issues that we're facing and that we, you know, as we've been talking about.
So, okay, so you don't recall any time where you faced any sort of, like, funding crisis, like, oh my god, this time next year we're gonna have, like, no money because this guy just cut it all off? Nothing that extreme?
This was I don't want to date myself completely, but I would say probably 10 years ago or so.
Well, that's not too bad.
I remember almost year after year around, because our fiscal year actually ends June 30th, so this time of year is that time of year when we start to see
right.
impact of, are we going to get the funding that we need? What does the budget look like?
Right.
And what is that impact, you know, of the state budgets, et cetera, going to be on our programs? And I do recall many years ago, there was some real fear across the system around not having the funding we need to support these vulnerable families. And I think the reason, and, you know, myself and many other child welfare professionals, you know, rallied at the Capitol and things like that. But, you know, and I think the only, at that time, part of what helped maintain even the minimal funding that we were receiving was due to some legal intervention.
Oh, wow. Okay. Interesting. I just have one more question because I do have another guest coming on in about 5 or 6 minutes. Is there any sort of statistics concerning foster children and what they become after being a foster child? Or, you know, like, let's say the cutoff is 21. You've been a foster child, you know, on and off because of problems. And you know, you end up, well, how do foster children tend to succeed in life after becoming foster children? Do they tend towards a different avenue in life? I mean, is there any sort of statistics on that? Do a lot of them become homeless or anything like that? Or, you know, but I don't know. I don't know how to say it. I just, you know, how do foster children tend to become after their foster children?
I know there are statistics. I mean, off the top of my head, don't know them specifically. I do know without affirming and loving foster homes, whether they be relative or not, you know, youth are at higher risk, having been in foster care for extended periods of time.
Right.
So the longer you're in foster care, you know, the more likely your outcomes may not be as positive and could include homelessness,
right.
You know, criminal involvement or being incarcerated, you know, being teenage pregnancy,
right,
or
right,
things
right,
of that
right,
nature. Right. And obviously substance abuse. And again, it's kind of that intergenerational, that some of the patterns repeat themselves at that point.
Sure.
So that's why foster care is not intended to be a placement. It's not supposed to be
right.
long-term. It really is supposed to be a short-term solution of offering
right.
intensive care and services until we can return youth to their, you know, families of origin.
Yeah, no, and I think you definitely nailed it. I mean, foster child or not, people, children, everybody excels in life when they are loved and when they are supported. That's
yeah.
that's the basic formula. That's really mostly what, I mean, you need education and proper, you know, healthy environment, that kind of thing too. But without love and support from your family, you're probably not going to do well. Ladies, thank you so much for coming on. I kind of wish I didn't schedule somebody else. I just wasn't sure how long this interview was going to go because I have like a lot more questions for you. But thank you. This has been a very informative hour. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Emily Roski and Mariah Brandon. You please keep up what you're doing. You're a beautiful people. You're doing a great thing for people.
So much and, for having us. I said thank you so much for having us.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. And are you guys set? Are you placed in Chicago right now or Palatine?
We have multiple office locations. We've got an office in Waukegan, Palatine, and Chicago,
yeah, okay.
and some other ones throughout. So, yeah, but really. The best way to reach us, as you know, Mariah references, we've got a Facebook page, Little City Foster Care. You can email us, foster@littlecity.org. We have a very easy phone number, 855-WE-FOSTER. So, you know, we'd be happy to answer any questions anybody has about foster care in general. Because, I mean, our philosophy always been is like, we need family, so it's so important. So, even if Little City is not the perfect match for you, not a problem. We'll direct you in the right place.
Gotcha. Very cool. Yeah. So
that kid that you can help.
Absolutely. Very cool. All right, ladies, thank you so much again, and you take care of yourselves. And I think that because I have so many more questions, I'm going to have to reach out to you again sometime and have you both back on the show. Is that okay?
Awesome. Be happy to do it.
All right, great. All right, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Absolutely. You take care. You have a good night, okay?
You too. Have a good one.
You too.
All right, ciao.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, we'll be right back to Reality Radio.
WRLR 98.3 FM.